Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, Shabbos Daf Memtes, where four lines from the top says the Gemara. Bizman Shehin Lachin, the Mishnah gave us a list of several materials which are not suitable to be used for Atmana. Atmana means wrapping the warm pot. Even wrapping it before Shabbos with these substances is prohibited. Why? Because these things are moisiv hevel. They generate heat, they generate warmth, and perhaps if one is going to use them for Atmana, he's going to perhaps also use remets, which is these ashes that contain coals. What's wrong with doing that? Because if he uses remets, he may go ahead and actually stir the coals on Shabbos, which is a malacha. So one may not use for Atmana any material which is moisiv hevel. Mishnah gives us a list of some items which are moisiv hevel. Only bizman shein lachen, when they're moist. So that's when you can't use them for atmana. However, when they're dry, then they're suitable. Says, well, what do you mean bizman shein lachen when they're moist? Iboilu, they ask the following shaila. Lachen machmas atzman? When we say moist, we mean naturally moist, inherently moist. On their own account, oidilma lachen machmas davar acher. That they're moist due to an external factor. They're really dry items, but perhaps some liquid fell on them, and that's how they became moist. So is it inherent, or is it something which came externally? Explains Rashi. Rashi has three lines from the top. Lachin machmas atzmon has an advantage. When something is inherently moist, mechame moist tfei, it generates more heat. Mi lachin machmas mashkin. This item, which is moist on its own account, is more of a heat-generating item than something which becomes moist machmas as a result of mashkin shenef naleim mishayavshu, as a result of liquid falling on it after this item has already dried up. So Rashi learns that it's a question of degrees of heat. Something which is lach machmas atzmoi, which is moist on its own account, is considered to be a greater generator of heat. And therefore the mother wants to know whether that is required to be considered to be moisiv hevel. Others explain it, but differently, that since the gzera here is, because he might go ahead and use remets, ashes with coals, so therefore the chachamim prohibited using items which are moisiv hevel. Now ashes with coals are inherently hot. The heat over there is machmas atzman, by their own account. And therefore the chachamim prohibited another item which generates heat by its own account, due to its own inherent natural moisture. So the hevel is coming as a result of its own power. And therefore, Chachamim prohibited that, gzeira this, on account of that. But something which is merely moisiv hevel, which is moist due to an external factor, perhaps, that is not included in this gzeira, that won't be confused with the remetz, which is a self-producing heat. Continues the Gemara, Tashma, will bring your raya. The Mishnah tells us, Loi b'tevin, one may not use straw, but loi b'zagim, skin, grape skins, v'loi b'muchen, these soft, unprocessed fibers, v'loi b'asavim, nor grass. So you can't use these items for atmana, bizman, so it's only at a time, shehein lach, when they're moist. Let's analyze it. Iyamres b'shleima. So if you propose that, when we speak about lachen, it is lachen machmas davar acher, even if it became moist due to an external factor. Shaper, so we understand the Mishnah, because all these items can indeed have become wet and moist due to liquid spilling on them. Heli amras lachen machmas atzman, but if you insist that lachen means machmas atzman due to his own moisture, muchen lachen machmas atzman hechemish garasla. How could you find muchen, these fibers, that are inherently moist, that are moist naturally? Muchen, lachen, machmas, atzman, hechemish kachla. How is that to be found? So inevitably our Mishnah is discussing when the lechus, when the moisture comes from an external source. Says Umar, no, it actually is possible that these fibers are inherently moist, are naturally moist. How is that? Mi mirta debeini atmi. We're speaking about these wool fibers that were plucked from between the beini atmi, between the thighs of the animal. Rashi says it's mali zeya, full of sweat, and the Rabbi Nechanan says it has the miraglayim, so it's moist, it's grimy, it's naturally moist, it's inherently moist. The moisture is so absorbed within it, it's not considered to be an external moisture, but rather an internal moisture. So we have no raya from our Mishnah. Perhaps lachos needs to be, the moisture has to come from within. And all these items can indeed be moist from within. Continues the Gemara, okay, so you'll explain the Mishnah as you did. What about the Braisa of Rabbi Yishu? Behold the Tani Rabbi Yishu. How are we going to explain the following Braisa of Rabbi Yishu? He says as follows, Toimnen Biksus Yivesha. One can be matman, can do atmana with a beged, an article of clothing which is dry, or a peris Yivesha, produce which is dry. For instance, using grains. As long as they're dry, they're not moist of hevel, and they're okay. Havo loy Biksus Lacha. One can use a moist article of clothing, and moist produce, says the Gemara. So we explained before, the muchen, these fibers, can be inherently moist, because we're speaking about, they were plucked from this location, the animal, which is always moist. What about this ksus lacha, that Rav Ishi is speaking about? How can we find a article of clothing, a beged, which is inherently moist? Suslacha machmas atzma, which is moist on its own account, heichem ishkachsla, how's that to be found? Says the Gemara here too, we could say, it is coming mimirta, from the plucking, the beni atmi, the fibers that was used to make this beged, is coming from the same location, from the beni atmi, between the thighs of the animal, and it is soaked and absorbed, and embedded with his zeo, with his moisture, and even after, he formed it into a beged, he spun it, and he wove it, and used it as a beged. Nevertheless, deep inside the fibers, there's still some of that moisture embedded within, and it is considered to be a suslacha, which is moisef hevel, and according to Isha, one cannot use it for atmana. Continues the Mishnah. Toimnin biksus uberperis. One can use ksus, a beged, or peris produce, for atmana, as Tosis points out, the fact that the Mishnah doesn't distinguish between moist or dry, apparently this Mishnah holds. In any case, one can be matman using a beged, a garment, or produce. Apparently this Mishnah disagrees with Rav Yishai's distinction between dry, which may be used, and moist, which cannot be used. Some of Farshim explain that the Mishnah will hold that even though perhaps this ksus and peris, which are moist, are heat-generating items, as Rav Yishai proposed. If they're lacha, they're considered to be moist of hevel. Nevertheless, the Tana holds that this is not considered to be the typical material used for insulation. Again, let's remember the point of the Isser, of using a davar ha-moist of hevel, is on account of confusion with remes, with ashes, which contain coals. Since these two things are moist of hevel, one may confuse one with the other, and just as he uses a material which is moist of hevel, he may use the ashes. So this gzera is applied to insulating items, items which are used for insulation. However, a garment, a ksus, it's a beged, it's not an item of insulation. He happens to be using it presently for atmana. Or peres, these are produce, these are grains. It's not considered to be items which are insulating items, items of atmana. They're produce, peres meant to be eaten. So perhaps the Tana holds that this gzera, this decree that Chacham applied, that one may not use a material for atmana since it is moist of hevel and it could be confused with remets. This only applies to materials which are materials of insulation. A beged, a peiris, are not materials of insulation. Therefore, the gzera will not apply. Continues the Mishnah, what else can be used for atmana? Vikan feyoina. You can use feathers of a dove. The first one speak out, it's just a typical thing that they would use that, but certainly you can use any sort of feather. The Rashash actually points out that kanafiyoin is referring to these large feathers, but the noitza, which is flush with its body, with the body of the yoin, which is close to the skin, that cannot be used because it's full of zeya, full of sweat, and that is considered to be moist of hevel. So the Mishnah is being particular, being specific, by saying kanfeyoina, referring to the feathers which are not within close proximity of the actual dove. Uben Eser Shal Shacharashim, on Kriyus Sodas Fatmana, Uben Eser Shal Pishtan, the chaff which is combed away from which falls away from the flax when it's processed. So you can use these items, daka, some are not gerish the word daka, so you can use the sawdust, or the ne'irish or pishtan, the droppings of the flax. Rabbi Yehuda, oyser b'daka, he says, cannot use the ne'irish or pishtan, the chaff from the flax, from the linen, if it is small pieces, umater b'gasa, but he can use it when it is coarse. So he can use thin pieces, but he can use coarse pieces, apparently the daka, on account of its greater mass, since it bunches together, it much more of it is present. Apparently, it generates heat. It's ma'aseh hevel. However, the gasa, the coarse pieces, since there are more spaces between them, apparently that is not considered to be a ma'aseh hevel and is permitted according to Rabbi Yehuda. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rabbi Yanai. The Gemara is going to begin discussing halacha regarding tefillin, and this is on account of the fact that the Mishnah mentions the term kanfeyoina, which the Gemara will relate to a story later on, and that story related to tefillin. Therefore, the Gemara opens by discussing a halacha with regard to tefillin. Omer Rav Yanai, tefillin tzrichim guf naki. In order to wear tefillin, one has to maintain a clean guf, a clean body. Maintain the same standard of guf naki, ki alisha baal knafayim. Just like the standard that Elisha, Baal Knafayim, the Gemara soon will tell us where this name came from. So just as he maintained a high standard of cleanliness when it came to wearing tefillin, we are also meant to do the same. Now what exactly does Guf Naki mean? Mayhi, what are we referring to? We have machlokes. Abayi Omar, Shlo Yafiach Ben, he must make sure, he must be confident in his ability to refrain from passing wind. He must make sure that he has the ability to resist the urge to pass wind when he's wearing the tefillin. That is considered to be guf naki. So one must make sure to do that before he dons tefillin. Rav Amar, shalei yishan behem. The fact that he has the ability to withstand hafacha, passing wind, that's standard to everybody. What we're referring to here is a higher degree of care. He must make sure, he must resist the urge. He must know that he has the ability to resist the urge to fall asleep. Because when one falls asleep, he's liable to pass wind, to be mafiach, which is an affront to the tefillin. Now apparently Abayi holds that is not necessary. Certainly, as Tosis points out, one may not go ahead and intentionally go to sleep with his tefillin on, but Abayi maintains that if he unintentionally falls asleep, there's no concern there. As long as while he's awake, he knows and he's confident in his ability to resist passing wind. Meaning that as long as he stands on guard while he's awake to treat his tefillin respectfully, that's sufficient. What happens after he falls asleep, that's not part of his obligation, part of his responsibility. As long as he doesn't actively, intentionally go to sleep. But if he should fall asleep unintentionally, that's not really a concern on his part. Rava maintains, yes, one is meant to make sure that he doesn't even fall asleep with his tefillin. Continues the Gemara. Okay, so we know that tefillin require gufnaki. We have two interpretations, Abaye and Rava. And actually, the Gemara here was referring to those days where they wore tefillin the entire day. And therefore, the Chacham need to warn and to instruct everybody in the proper manner, the proper respect they're supposed to relate with to that tefillin. Now, in fact, today we don't really have that ability. Therefore, we restrict our tefillin wearing to merely shachris on account of our weakness, since we can't really conform to this to these restrictions. Continues the Gemara. Why did we refer to Elisha as a Baal Knafayim? Va'amai karli Baal Knafayim, says the Gemara, as a result of the following story. Shepamachas, there was once a story that Gozra, Malchus, Roimi HaRasha, Malchus Roimi, the Romans, the Roman kingdom, HaRasha, the wicked Malchus Roimi, was going to decree a Gzir al Yisrael. Shekola meniach tefillin, Yenakros moichai, one wears tefillin, it will gouge out his brain, which is right underneath the spot where the tefillin shel roish is worn. As the Mashal points out, the gzeira was specifically directed at the tefillin shel roish. Why is that? Because we know that tefillin shel roish symbolizes the shame of Hashem, which rests on the head of Klal Yisrael, as the pasuk says, "V'ro kolam yaretz," all the nations of the earth will see. Ki shem Hashem nikra lecha. Hashem's name is called, rests upon you. It's called on Klal Yisrael. V'yorim mecha, they'll have fear from you. This is referring specifically to the tefillin shel roish, as we learned in Maseches Brachos. And the Hashem Hashem is visible on the shel roish, has the shin engraved on the, embedded on the outside of the bayis. So this was the gzera. It was directed at the tefillin shel roish specifically. They were threatened by it, and they wanted to abolish it. So what did Elisha do? He was Moisa Nefesh. He risked his life on account of the fulfillment of Mitzvah Tefillin. V'yalisha menicham v'yaitzel l'shuk. He would wear the tefillin shel roish and go out to the marketplace. Ra'ohu kaster echad. An officer saw him. One of the Romans who was in charge of compliance of this gezeira. So he noticed him wearing the tefillin. Rots miponav. So Elisha ran away from him. V'rots achrav. And the officer pursued him, ran after him. V'kivan shehigeh esloi. When he caught up with him, not l'miroshei. Elisha quickly removed it from his head. V'achzom miyadai. And hid it inside his hand. Amar loi. So the Roman told him, Maza miyadecha, what's in your hand? Amar loi kan fiyayna. It's merely feathers of a dove. Indeed, he opened his hand. And the tefillin appeared to the Roman as if they were kanfei yoina. Feathers, simple feathers, dove feathers. So this is a nes that occurred to him on account of his mysterious nefesh for tefillin. Lefichach, on account of this story, Koronoisei Elisha Baal Knafayim. They gave him the title of Elisha Baal Knafayim on account of the kanfei yoina, which happened with the nes that happened to him with the kanfei yoina. So Tosis explains, this indeed is the reason why the Gemara began by relating to Elisha's standards. One must maintain a guf naki when he wears tefillin, ke Elisha baal knafayim. How do we know that Elisha maintained high standards? Very simple, says Tosis. Because mistama kivan shenasel enesis, as Tosis in the beginning of the Dibra Maschel, ke Elisha baal knafayim. Tosis says, the mistama kivan shenasel enesis. We must assume that since a nes occurred to him b'tfilin, on account of his mitzvah nefesh b'tfilin, so in all probability, he was very careful with regard to the tefillin, and he related to them with utmost respect, and he maintained a clean body. He fulfilled, he observed the mitzvah tefillin properly, with utmost respect, and therefore, indeed, on account of his proper fulfillment of the tefillin as mesiras nefesh, for the proper observance of tefillin, a nes, a miracle occurred to him. So he's the benchmark for the gold standards of guf naki with regard to tefillin. Continues the Gemara, u'mayishno kan feyoina. Okay, so Elisha had to say there was something in his hands. He said feathers, but why do you refer to kan feyoina? Doves, wings, doves, feathers specifically. Why specifically kanfiyoina? Why did the nesim indeed occur with kanfiyoina? What was it symbolizing? Maishna kanfiyoina mishar oifis. Why yoina more than other birds? The answer is mishum. The imsel knesses Yisrael yoina. Because Klal Yisrael is nimshal, analogous to a yoina. Shenemar, as it says in Shir Hashirim, kanfiyoina, the wings of a dove, nechba b'kesef, covered with silver. And this is indeed a mashal to Klal Yisrael, who are covered like the wings of a dove, who covered the dove. And what is the mashal? What is the comparison here? Ma yoina, just like a dove, knafeh meginei seleh, its wings protect it when it tries to ward off the predators. It doesn't use its beak like other birds do, rather it uses its wings to protect itself. Af Yisrael, the same thing regarding Klal Yisrael, mitzvois meginei seleh, the mitzvois protect Klal Yisrael. So indeed, Elisha, who was being Moisa Nefesh for mitzvahs, which protect Klal Yisrael, used the term kanfiyoina, which just symbolizes the state of Klal Yisrael, which are always covered with mitzvahs who protect them. Now the Ran asks a kasha. We know that there's a halacha. If the figayim establish a decree, they enact a gzera for the purpose of oppressing Klal Yisrael and stamping out the Torah. Is it a shas hashma? They're trying to abolish the Torah, abolish mitzvahs, prevent Klal Yisrael from doing Torah mitzvahs. One must be meisir nefesh, must risk his life for the fulfillment of those mitzvahs. Even if he's going to have to forfeit his life, he meisir nefesh. So not only those three mitzvahs, chamuris, like gilui arayis, etc., even a mitzvah kala, an ordinary mitzvah, one is meant to risk his life. So why did Elisha remove the tefillin when the guy approached him? Why didn't he keep it on him and risk his life? Says the Ran, that's halacha, that one was be willing to forfeit his life in a shas hashmad, in a time when the goyim are trying to stamp out the Torah mitzvahs. That is only applied to an avera, to transgressing a sin, to being over an avera. However, in this case, where the gzera was directed at bittul mitzvah, to abolish doing a mitzvah, in that case, it is not a maisa avera, it's not an active transgression of avera, and therefore, this halacha does not apply. Says the Ran, if so, how could Elisha risk his life if this wasn't required? Says the Ran, even though it's not a requirement, it's not an obligation upon all. However, if one chooses to demonstrate his utmost commitment, dedication, a high level of Mesiras Nefesh to Hashem and his Torah and his mitzvahs, he may do so, even if there's no chiv, no obligation. Therefore, Elisha indeed was willing to risk his life on account of Kiyum Mitzvah Tefillin. So if so, one may ask, why did he remove it? So perhaps he risked his life, he was willing to give up his life, but when the guy saw him, so for a quick moment he'll remove it and preserve his life. That I guess he was trying to do that. If it's only a matter of removing it for a moment, that was not a stira to his Mesiras Nefesh. So on the one hand, he was willing to risk his life, he wore his tefillin, but at the last moment, if it's just a matter of removing for a minute to save his life, so that is what he did. Continues the Gemara, B'nesurah shel charoshen, this was one of the materials mentioned in the Mishnah. Sawdust can be used. Menorah shel pishtan, this chaff coming from the flax, it can be used. According to Rabbi Yehuda, daka, if they're thin, then it's considered to be meisif hevel, it cannot be used for atman. Ibailu, says the Gemara, when we ask the following question. What is Rav Yehuda referring to? We have two things. We have the sawdust, we have the Neir Shel Pishtan. So Rav Yehuda's restriction is referring to both or only to one? And the Neir Shel Charoshen Koi, is it referring to also the sawdust? Or the Neir Shel Pishtan Koi? Or is he specifically applying his restriction to the Neir Shel Pishtan? Tashma, come and listen to the following braisa. The Sani we learned, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ne'er Shel Pishtan Daka, Hariyu Kezevel. Ne'er Shel Pishtan, the chaff of the flax, which is Daka thin, Hariyu Kezevel is equated with manure, which is considered to be Moisif Hevel. Shma Mina, so it's pretty evident from here, that Rabbi Yehuda's restriction is only applicable to Ne'er Shel Pishtan and not to the sawdust. Shma Mina, Ne'er Shel Pishtan Koi, Shma Mina, indeed, this is a raya that Rabbi Yehuda's disagreement with Tanakama only pertains to Ne'er Shel Pishtan. However, sawdust, even according to Yehuda, may be used even when it is coarse. Continues the Mishnah. Toimnin b'shalachin. One may use shalachin, these are raw hides. He can use it for atmana. It is not maisif hevel. It doesn't generate heat. Not only can he use it for atmana. Umit haltalin oison. One can move it on Shabbos. It's not mukta. Why is that? Because it can be used, it's suitable to be used as a carpet, to recline on it. So it's not muktzah. However, begizei tzemer, shears of wool can be used for atmana, ve'ein metal tnoisen. These cannot be moved, they're muktzah. Since they are designated, Rashi says they're muktzah, saying, litvois ol erek, to be used for spinning and weaving. So they're muktzah. Continues the Mishnah. So if he's going to go ahead and use the tzgizei tzemer for atmana, he's going to wrap his pot with it. How is he going to ever get to the contents of the pot, which is covered with its gizei tzemer, which are muktzah? So the Mishnah gives us instructions. Kate said the Waisa, what is he meant to do? To bypass these gizei tzemer, which are muktzah? Very simple. Noitel sakisa ve'nayflois. He picks up the lid and he slides off the Gidit Semer in that manner. As the Magen Avraham points out, apparently this lid has a handle which protrudes past the Gidit Semer. So he merely grabs the handle, tips over the lid, and has the Gidit Semer slide off on their own without actually coming into contact with him, and then he can access the content of the pot. Now, is he meant to take out the pot, or merely tip the pot over within the basket of Gizei Tzemer? We have a machlekes. Rav Elazar ben Azaria Omer, he shouldn't actually take out the pot. Once he uncovers it, kupa, this entire basket which contains the pot, which is surrounded, insulated by the Gizei Tzemer, which are muksa, he's merely meant to take it, kupa mata al tzida, tip it on its side, venoitel, and remove the content in that manner. And don't take out the pot. Why? Shema yito. Perhaps he's going to remove the pot. Veinu yachla haser, and he won't be able to return it because the gizei tzemer, which are surrounding, perhaps will collapse into the cavity where the pot was positioned. And now he's going to have to clear away the gizei tzemer, which are muksa, in order to return the pot, to leave it there, to return it there, so that the food inside will keep warm. Therefore, better just simply leave the pot in there and tip the whole basket and remove the contents in that manner. No, that's not necessary. He can actually remove the pot, and when he's done, put it back. The Gemara explains later. We're not concerned that the Gizei Tzemer will collapse into the cavity. Continues the Gemara. Yosef, Rabbi Yosef ben Achinoi, Rabbi Yosef ben Elazar. So these two Chacham were sitting together, and they had company. V'Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Bar Chama, Gabayu. So all three were sitting together, V'Kamibayilu, and they pondered regarding the following Shiloh. They asked, let's take a look at the halacha in the Mishnah. The Mishnah speaks about shilachin, raw hides, which can be used for atmana, and are also not considered to be mukta, as explained earlier, because they're suitable to be used as a rug, one can lean on them, rely on them. Are we speaking about shlachan hides which belong to a ordinary person, non-professional, a simple homeowner? Shlachan shabal abaisnan? But aval shal uman. But the shlachan, which the hides which belong to an uman, a tanner, which are destined, designated to be used commercially, perhaps in that case, they're moktza, kiven the kapit alayu, since the uman, this tanner, is makfir on them. He cares for them, and he's careful that they don't get soiled. Loi matatalinlu. Perhaps in that case it's muktza, since he's careful not to use it for other functions, other uses, and therefore they're simply designated and they're miyuchad for tanning, for malacha to be completed in the tanning process, and they're considered to be muktza. Or perhaps shalom atanan. Now the Mishnah is even referring to the hides which belong to a uman, a craftsman. There's no concern. They're not considered to be muktzah because they're meant to be used also as a rug for reclining. The kolshen shabal bayis. And certainly, needless to say that the hides which belong to a bayis is of course not muktzah. So this was their shiloh. The shalach and the hides mentioned in our Mishnah which aren't muktzah, are they referring to in homeowners who's not makbid on using them for a rug? However, a craftsman is makbid, and therefore it's mukta. Or perhaps we're speaking about even hides which belong to an uman, and certainly the hides of a bal bayis is not mukta. Continues the Gemara, Amar hu Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar. So Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar turned to him and said as follows: Mistaver, it is logical to say, Sho bal bayis tanan, that the Mishnah is discussing the hides of a bal bayis, aval shel uman kapet alayu, but the hide which belong to a craftsman, a tanner, it's muktzah because he's makbid not to use it for other uses. Amalu Rav Chanina bar Chama. So Rav Chanina bar Chama responded and he said no. Kach amar Rav Shmuel bar Yosi. Rav Shmuel bar Yosi stated the following incident. Rav Shmuel, who was the son of Yosi, he said that my father, Abba, my father of Yosi, Shulchahava, he's actually a professional tanner. He was an uman, a craftsman. And he said, V'amar, he said, Rashi says this is referring to during the weekdays. He said, "Haviu shlachan, bring the hides, v'neishav aleim, so we can sit on them." So apparently, he was not makpid on those hides. So we see clearly that even the shlachim, the hides which belong to a craftsman, an uman, a tanner, is not mukta because it is designated to be used even as a rug to recline on it, and therefore it has a shimush heter on Shabbos and is not mukta. Continues the word, is that so? Meisvei, we have a kash from a brisa. Nisarim shvalabais, boards that belong to an homeowner, an ordinary person, a non-professional. Matalat noisam, one can move it on Shabbos, it's not mukta. However, v'shal uman, those boards which belong to an uman, a professional, a craftsman, a matalat noisam, they're mukta on Shabbos. V'im chishav alis, it's alayim pas la'urchim. However, if he designated, he had the intention, the machshava, chishav losis alayim, to place upon them, to serve upon them, pas, bread la'urchim, for the guests. So he had machshava to use it for this type of use, for a shimush heter, benkech or benkech, whether it belongs to a balabayis or whether it belongs to an uman, it is not muktzah metalton, one can move it on Shabbos. So we see clearly that there is a distinction between an item which belongs to an ordinary person which is not muktzah, as opposed to the nesarim which belong to the uman which are considered to be muktzah. So the same thing with regard to eirois, with regard to these shalachim, with regard to these hides. Says more, there's a difference between hides and boards. Shani nesarim. Nesarim are different to kapod alayim. Indeed, the uman is makpid alem. He objects to them being used for other uses, for concern that they'll get ruined, they'll get warped. Apparently, they're more delicate than merely hides, which perhaps he's not makpid to be used as a rug. Toshma, come and hear raya from the following brisa. The brisa says, oirois, leathers, bein avudim, whether they're processed and tanned, bein she'en avudim, whether they're not processed. Mutal letaltum b'Shabbos. One can move it on Shabbos, so even if it's not processed, if it's not tanned yet, it can be used as a rug, it has a shimush heter on Shabbos, and it's not mukta. Lo yomru avudim. This specification of, this requirement of avudim, of it being need to be tanned, to be processed, is not a requirement, it's not a stipulation, not a condition for mukta on Shabbos. Because for Shabbos, it is not mukta regardless. This concept of avudim is only pertaining to elul inyan tumah bavad. It only applies to the halacha of mekabel tumah, that the oiris, the leathers, are only considered to be finished products, a klisha nigmar melachtoi, with regard to the ability to be mekabel tumah, only if it was avudim, it was already processed and tanned. So this is a concept which only applies to kabbalas tumah. With regard to Shabbos, there is no such stipulation. As long as you use it on Shabbos, it is mutter, it is not mukta. Says more, my love. It must be, apparently, the Braisa generalizes. Lo ishna shabal bayis, v'lo ishna shal uman. The Braisa is merely giving us an all across the board heter. Oirois can be moved on Shabbos and not mukta. Apparently, the fact that the Braisa doesn't differentiate between the oirois of a homeowner, of a tanner, apparently there's no difference. In either case, it's mutter, it's not mukta. This indeed is a raya to Rishmo Rav Yosi. Says one loy, no, perhaps Shobal Abayis. The Braisa is specifically speaking about the Eiros of Abayis, who's not makpid on it, and therefore it's not muktzah. Says more, is that so? Aval Shal Uman, my, are you going to say that the ones that belong to Uman, my, Ema Taltlan, are muktzah on account of the kpeda, of the fact that the Uman is particular about not diverting it for other uses, and therefore it's muktzah? If that's the case, let's take a closer look at the Braisa. The Braisa tells us that Oiroi's leathers, whether or not they're processed, are not mukta. However, the concept of processing does apply somewhere. It applies with regard to Kabbalah's Tumah. Why does the Braisa need to jump over to a different subject entirely? The Braisa could have given us a stipulation with regard to mukta on Shabbos itself. Says the Gemara, Yachi, if so, if once again the Uman is different, and his leathers are mukta. Hodetani. This is what the Braisa tells us. V'loi amru avudim. This concept of the requirement to be tanned, to be processed, is only said, is only applied. It only applies to the halach of Kabbalah's tumah, because when it's processed, it is mekabel tumah. Why does the Braisa need to go over to a different topic? Switch the topic, switch the subject. Lif like v'lisne b'didah. The Braisa could have chosen to to present a distinction within the subject matter at hand, within the concept of moksa, within the subject of moksa, and tell us as follows. When is this halacha said? When is this heter of tiltul oireis said and applied? Only when it belongs to a homeowner, an ordinary person. When it's not moksa. Aval, but you should know. I want to tell you something. There is a stipulation. There is a distinction. Aval bishal uman loy. But if it belongs to a tanner, a professional, then it's moksa. So the Braisa could have taught us this halacha, a distinction. If the Braisa was looking to make a chilik, a distinction, the Braisa should have dwelled and focused on moksa itself. Sometimes it's moksa, and you should know, sometimes it's not. Why do the Braisa need to go ahead and transfer to a different topic altogether regarding tumah? Says the Gemara, that is not a kasha. The Braisa chose to focus on the oiris belonging to the Baal Bayis, the homeowner. And within that context, the Braisa wanted to find a distinction and tell us and teach us that, you know, this concept of processing, of tanning, doesn't really apply to muksa, but you should know it applies to Kabbalah's tumah. So the Braisa was looking to find the details and distinctions within the context of oiris Baal Bayis. It did not want to switch tracks and go over to a different type of oiris, a different type of hide which belongs to Uman. But perhaps indeed there is a difference between the oiris of Baal Bayis and the oiris of Uman. The Braisa was not implying that there is no difference. So perhaps an oiris of a Uman indeed is different and it is Mukta. Says the Gemara in conclusion, Kitanoi, indeed we find the Machlokes Tanoi regarding this question. The Braisa begins by saying, Oirish Baal Bayis Matalt Noisan. Leathers belonging to Baal Bayis can be moved on Shabbos. Vishal Uman. However, the Oirish of the Uman ain't Matalt Noisan their Muktzah. Because they're designated to be used for tanning, for processing, and it's not meant to be used for a rug to recline on. Rabbi Yossi Oimer, Echad Zeh Matalt Noisan. Whether it belongs to Uman or to Baal Bayis, in both cases, it's not muktzah, and this indeed concurs with the story related by his son, Rabbi Shmuel Rav Yossi, who told us that my father Abba was not makpid on the hides, and certainly, as we see in this price as well, he did not consider it to be muktzah on account of that use. Then the first one speak out, point out that Rashi over here on Amud Beis relates to the distinction between these two types of leathers, the oiris of the Baal Bayis, which are not muktzah, and the oiris of the Uman, which perhaps are muktzah. Rashi describes the oiris of the Uman, of the tanner, as being oiris avudim, they've already been processed. And Rashi interprets the Gemara in that context, that the discussion that perhaps the oiris of the Uman are more stringent, are held on a higher standard than muksa, is speaking about specifically leather which was already processed, was already tanned. And therefore the Uman, after already investing that effort, after completing, finishing up the processing of the leather, he's indeed makpid on it, not to divert its use for anything else. So according to Rashi, it would seem that the entire Gemara, when the Gemara related to the high, the shalachim, the oiris of the Uman, the Gemara pondered regarding the halacha, whether it's muktzah, whether it's different than the oiris of Baal Bayis. According to Rashi, it seems that we're speaking about specifically leather hide which is already processed, and indeed there's a reason to believe, there's grounds of concern that indeed it's muktzah because the Uman is makpid not to use these processed hides for another purpose. Now, once again, let's go back to the concept of mentioned the Braisa, that the halacha, the processing, the avudim, only pertains to makabel tumah. It doesn't pertain to muksa. Now, what is the reason for that? Because tumah is only on a kli shenigmar malachta, only a vessel which is completely processed, which was completed. It's considered to be a kli with regard to kabbalah's tumah. This concept doesn't apply to muktzah. As long as it's used on Shabbos, it is not muktzah. And as Tosfos points out, in fact, even with regard to Kabbalah's tumah, raw hide, which was designated, which was miyuchad, to be used as a rug, to recline on it, says Tosfos, it will be makamal tumah as well, because yichud designation changes the status of this hide, and the ibur does not require it, even with regard to kabbalas tumah. So once again, even if he takes rawhide, but he's meyachid it for yeshiva to be used as a rug, to sit on, to recline on it, it will be makabal tumah. However, says Tosfos, that for muktzah, that even that's not required. Yichud is not required, as we learned in Al Gemara. As long as this rug is used for heter, to recline and sit on it, even if it's not miyuchad, if it's not designated for that purpose, nevertheless not considered to be muktzah on account of the fact that it has shimush heter on Shabbos. So in summary, the Mishnah taught us that these shalachan, these oiris, these pieces of hide may be used for atmana, for wrapping of a pot, since they're not mice of hevel. The Mishnah also told us that they're not muktzah, metaltel naisan. The Gemara wanted to know whether this halacha of tiltel, this heter, applies strictly to the oiris of a balabais, who's not makpid on them, he allows them to be used as a rug, so therefore they have a shimush heter, permissible use on Shabbos as well, and they're not muktzah. However, perhaps a uman, a craftsman, with his oiris avudim, with his processed hide, is different. He's makpid on it. He takes care, great care, to preserve his processed leather, to protect it from getting soiled, since he intends on using it for commercial use. The Gemara concluded that indeed is a machlekes in a braisa whether or not the oiris of an uman are muktzah or not. We learned one more halacha with regard to kabbalas tumah, that only oiris abudim, hides, leather which is already processed, enables it to be mekabel tumah, since it's considered to be a gemar, nigmar melachta. And as Tosfos pointed out, that even if he's merely miyachid it liyeshiva, he designates it to be used to sit on, to recline on it. That too gives it the din of kabbalas tumah. Continues the Gemara, Hodur Yasvi. So these three chachamim who had presented us with the former shaila with regard to Iris, so they were sitting and they pondered further. And they pondered the following question. We know there is something called Aveis Malachis, various forms of labor, of work, which is Asur on Shabbos. Aveis Malachis, the main forms of labor. Where does it come from? Hadisnan, this is what we learned in the Mishnah, Aveis Malachis. How many Aveis Malachis are there? Different variations of Aveis Malachis. Arboim Chasar Achas. 40 minus 1. The Aveis Malachis equal 39. Connected me. What does this correspond to? Where do we get that number 39 from? As Tosfos points out, what exactly is the Gemara's question here? Because we find, says Tosfos, that some malachas are very similar to each other. For instance, we have zoyre, which is winnowing, boirer, picking out the soilus, the pebbles out of the grain, and merakit, sifting. All these three things are really based on one single principle, which is removing bad from good. So why do we list them as three separate Aveis Malachis? Apparently, says Tosfos, the Gemara knew. And this was their question. Apparently we knew that we get this number from somewhere. And the Aveis Malachis equal a tally up to the number 39. And therefore we're meant to separate Zoyre and Boyre and Merakit and consider them to be separate Malachis. In order that we come up with the number 39. So where does this come from? What does it correspond to? Connect with me. Amaluhu. I'm going to tell you where it comes from. Kineged, it corresponds to Avodas HaMishkan, the various forms of labor which were employed in the construction, the preparation of the Mishkan. So, what was the connection between the Malachis of the Mishkan, the Avodas HaMishkan, and the Avodas of Shabbos? As Rashi explains, this is Rashi inside 15 lines from the top. Rashi says, Kineged Avodas HaMishkan. What is the connection between Malachis Shabbos and Avodas HaMishkan? Oison Hamanuyos Sham. Those Malachis which were listed over there in that Mishnah in Perek HaGadol, all those Malachis, those forms of labor of work, Hayitzrichan LeMishkan, were necessary for the building, for preparation, for the construction of the Mishkan. UParshas Shabbos Nis Mechol LeParshas Malach LeMishkan. We find in the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, the Torah joins together the prohibition of doing Malach on Shabbos, the Parsha Shabbos, right next to the Malachas HaMishkan. What is the point of being soimich one to the other? Lilmoid HaMena. It's meant to teach us to derive one from the other. What does the Torah mean when the Torah says refrain from doing malach on Shabbos? It's referring to those specific forms of malach which were employed in the Mishkan. So that's how we get to number 39. Amalu Rabbi Yosef ben Elazar. I have a different approach. Kach Omar, this is how it was said by Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yosi ben Lekunya. The 39 malachas are connected, they correspond to something else. The 39 times that we find a reference to malacha in the Torah, a reference to the word work, malacha or malachtoi or maleches, that are found in the Torah, which are abayim chasachas, 39 times. What is the connection between that and the 39 malachas? Once again, let's take a look in Rashi. Around 21 lines from the top, Shabbat Torah, the various times that the term work is mentioned in the Torah, Shaksuim b'chol haTorah, v'achi kamakra, because this is what the pasuk means to say, Lo yisasa kol malacha, don't perform any sort of work, kol malacha, k'minyan kol malacha Shabbat Torah. Torah is telling us refrain from various forms of labor of work on Shabbos, which are alluded to by the exact number of times that the Torah mentions the term work in the Torah, which is 39. So we have two approaches, two sources for the concept of 39 of Esmalachis. Continues the Gemara by Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef asked the following question. There's a pasuk by Yosef which says, Vayyabe Habay, so Yosef returned home, las Esmalachta to perform his Malacha. Is this one of the 39? Miminyanahu? Is this considered to be in the calculation, in the tally of 39? Oilai or not? What's the question? Let's take out a Sefer Torah and go through the Sefer Torah and count and see whether we need this one, whether this is considered to be one of the 39. Did not Rabbi Bar Chana tell us the name of Yochanan? This was regarding a different circumstance where they had a similar question. And he said, they didn't move from their Achevi Sefer Torah until they brought a Sefer Torah among them and they counted. So here too, let's take a safe turn and count. What's the Shaila? Amar Leis, Rav Yosef responded, it's not a question of numbers. Kikam Asapkali, the reason why I have a suffix here is on account of the following dilemma. Mishum Dechsiv, because the Pasuk also says elsewhere, this was regarding the Kali Yisrael when they brought the donations for the Mishkan. The Pasuk says, V'amalacha Yisei Dayam. The Malacha was sufficient, was enough. Now, we're not sure exactly if that was Miminyanu, if that was considered to be one of the 39 that we counted. So Malacha Haisadayim is referring to the work, the labor, the crafting of the actual Mishkan, which was done meticulously and precisely as much as was needed. So Malacha Haisadayim is not referring to the bringing of the donations, but rather referring to the crafting of the craftsmen, the malacha that they did in the construction of the Mishkan. It was done in the right amount as necessary. So indeed, the malacha is referring to work, and this is considered to be part of the 39. However, the other pasuk by Yosef, which says, Vayyava and Baisa Lassus Malachta, it's not referring to he came to do his task, his chores. Rather, we're meant to interpret that pasuk a little differently. There's a machlekes in Gemara Saita. What is the pasuk referring to? Yosef HaTzadik returned to the home of Potiphar, las his malacha to perform his malacha. Is it referring to the tasks that he needed to do, the malacha, the work that he needed to do in the home? Or is it actually referring to malacha, the yavera, with the wife of Potiphar? So apparently, if this pasuk, ha-malacha yisedayim, means literally the malacha, the work of the craftsman, and this is considered to be one of the 39 times the work is mentioned in the Torah, so apparently the other word, malachta, by Yosef, is not referring to actual work. We're meant to interpret that pasuk differently, that he came to do the avera. Oidimo, perhaps. We're meant to translate that pasuk as referring to tasks and chores and work. It's part of the counting of 39, because malachta is referring to actual work. He didn't come to do the avera, he came to do his chores, his tasks. And therefore, malachta is referring to actual work, and indeed is counted amongst the 39. This other pasuk, this extra pasuk, v'amalacha sedayim, is not referring to work. V'hai v'amalacha sedayim, hachikamar. This is how we're meant to interpret it. This shom le'ivita, that the task of bringing the donations was completed. So the problem again is we have an extra pasuk here. We have a dilemma. We're meant to have 39, we really have 40. Because we have the pasuk of Malachi Sedayim, And we have the pasuk of Ayav HaBaisa HaSmachti. So we need to pick and choose. We need to decide which one is counted amongst the 39. Which one means work and which one doesn't. Take who this was left unresolved. Continues the Gemara Tani, we have a Braisa, Kiman the Omar, in support of the Shita, which says Kineged Avodas HaMishkan, that the 39 Avos Malachos correspond to the various forms of Avodah employed in the construction preparation of the Mishkan. The Tani will enter a Braisa. Ein Chayoven, one is not liable on Shabbos, Ella only al Malacha, on a form of Malacha, on a form of work, Shekayoseba, Haysub Mishkan, which the likes of which was employed in the Mishkan. For instance, Haim Zaru, they planted herbs to be used in the dyeing process to color the various items they need to color to dye, for instance, the wool or the hides of the rams. Therefore, since it was used in the Mishkan, you too, Va'af Atem Leisizru, you too shouldn't plant. Haim Katsru, they reaped. Va'atem Leisizru, you don't do that. Haim Helos Akroshim, they lifted the crush on the boards when they needed to move the Mishkan around. They lifted it from Mikarka, from the ground, which was the Shusha Rabbim, up to the Agala, to the wagon, which was a Shusha Yachad because it had the right dimension of Shusha Yachad. It was 4x4 tfachim wide and had walls 10 tfachim high. So just as they did that in the Mishkan, Atem, Lois Achnisu, Mishusha Rabbim, Shusha Yachad, you too may not go ahead and do the Malacha of bringing an item from a Shusram and Shusayachit. Hey, they in the Mishkan, Hayridu Sakrosham, they brought down, lowered the Krosham, Me'agolah LaKarka, from the wagon which was a Shusayachit down to the Karka, which was a Shusarabim. Va'atem, therefore, as a result, you, Loi Seitziu, don't do it so, from a Shusayachit to Shusarab. One more item. So we must make a small introduction here. When they would transport the Mishkan, they set up a system as follows. They would park two pairs of Agolis. One pair of agolis next to the Mishkan, and behind that another pair of agolis. And what they would do is they would take the krushim, the heavy boards, and lift it up from the karka up to the first agola, where a levi was standing, and he would take it and transfer it over to the other agola, the other wagon standing behind it. Continues the Gemara, Heim hoitziu me'agola agola, they transferred from one wagon to the other. Therefore, as a result, va'atem lo yitziu mershesayachot shesayachot. You two don't transfer from one mershesayachot to the other shesayachot. Says, well, what's wrong with doing that? Mishu Sayachit. Mishu Sayachit? Micah Ovid, what type of malach is he doing? Why is that asr? That can't be so. Says the Gemara, you're right. Abai v'rovid, the Amr Tavayu. They both interpret as follows. V'itema, some say it was Rada Ba'ava. What the Brisa means to say is Mishu Sayachit. Mishu Sayachit, derech Mishu Sarabim. It went through, it was passed through Mishu Sarabim because in between the rows of agolis, of wagons, there was a strip of Mishu Sarabim in between. So just as they passed from one Rishas Yochid, passed through the Rishas Rabim over to the other Agala, you too cannot be Moshe, you cannot pass even from one Rishas Yochid to the other if you're passing it through the airspace of Rishas Rabim. So we see clearly that the Malachas of Shabbos are meant to correspond to the Malachas employed in the construction of and preparation of the Mishkan. So in summary, the 39 Avos Malachos, what do they correspond to? We have one Shita, it corresponds to the Avodas of the Mishkan. And why is that? Because as Rashi explained, the Parsha Shabbos, who was Nismacha, was joined to the Lechsa Mishkan to indicate that one is meant to learn from the other. We have another approach, that the 39 Akinega, the 39 times, the word Malacha is alluded to in the Torah. And that is what the Pasuk means, like Sasukha Malacha. You may not perform all types of Malacha, which is alluded to, the number of malachas, which is alluded to by the times that the Torah mentions the word malacha. The Gemara concluded with an uncertainty with regard to Tupsukim, HaMalacha Yisadayim, and Yosef came back, Lasis Malachti, how we meant to interpret these Tupsukim. One of them is part of the tally of 39, and the other one isn't. So which one it means literally malacha, and which one doesn't? Okay, time for a Chazara on today's daf. We began with a question of the term lachin in the Mishnah. These things which are moist, are moist of hevel, are we speaking about self-moisture, self-moist, naturally moist, which are machame moist fe, as Rashi says, they generate more heat, or even if they're moist on account of an external factor, the Gemara left it unresolved. The Mishnah continued telling us that one may use different items, various items, for Hatmana, Ksus, Peretz, and Kanfeyoina. And as a result of that, the Gemara brought the whole story with Elisha, who was Moisa Nefesh for wearing tefillin, and indeed, in his hand was found Kanfeyoina, and that saved him. The Gemara told us that Klal Yisrael are compared to the Kanfeyoina, because just as the Yoina, Klal Yisrael is compared to a Yoina, just like the Yoina has its wings which protect it, Klal Yisrael's mitzvahs protect it. The Gemara continued discussing the Shalachan hides, which may be used for Atmana, and are not Muktzah. However, Gizei Tzemer, shares of wool, may be used, but they are Muktzah. Now, it's interesting, Rashi points out an interesting Kasha. This is Rashi, 20 lines from the bottom. Rashi says like this, what about Basis al Davar Asr? The Mishnah describes the manner in which he's meant to take out the content of the pot by merely lifting the handle of the kisei of the container, sliding off in that manner the Gizei Tzemer, which are Muktzah. Now, what about the concept of buses? Perhaps one can't even go ahead and touch the lid of the pot because it is forming a buses, a basis. It's considered to be a support for the Gizei Tzemer, which are Muktzah, which are lying on it. Says Rashi, it's not considered to be Muktzah. Why? Let's take a look at Rashi inside, 20 lines from the bottom. Noitel Kisei Shel Kederi can take the lid off the pot. Sheyesher is clear lab because it's considered to be a kli. It's not Muktzah. Va'afal Gav, says Rashi, although Shein Aleh, these Gizei Tzemer, these shares of wool which are Muktzah, are sitting on this lid. We're not concerned with it. Why? The Loinasis Basis land, because this lid does not become a Basis. Shein Asri Ela Lechasis Kedera, the lid. Perhaps Rashi is referring to the Gizei Tzemer as well. Everything is meant, is intended for the purpose of covering the Kedera. Meaning the lid is not coming to support the Gizei Tzemer, he's coming to cover the pot. So the point of buses means that the basis is bottle, is subordinate, is secondary to the muktzah which is placed on top of it because it's supporting it. It's its base. In this case, it's not so because it's not serving, it's not functioning as a support for the Gizei Tzemer. Just the opposite. Everything is coming to cover the pot. So the Gizei Tzemer is serving the lid, serving the pot. The lid is serving the pot. And nobody's coming to serve and to aid and assist the Gizei Tzemer, so nothing becomes a basis to the Gizei Tzemer, and it's not considered to be muktzah. The Gemara proceeded discussing the halacha of the hides, and as we concluded, the oiris of a bala bayis is not muktzah. The oiris of a uman, if it's tanned and processed, we have a machlekes, and we know that regarding kabbalas tumah, it needs to be processed. We conclude with the halacha of 39 balachis. What do they correspond to? One shita says it corresponds to the avodas in the Mishkan, and the other shita says it corresponds to the 39 times the word malacha is mentioned in the Torah.